Ladies and gentlemen, welcome again to the Allendale 20th anniversary celebration. We are so glad you're here. My name is Wes and I'm an alcoholic. All right, we got some exciting stuff tonight. And one of them, Lisa's gonna help me with this and bring something up to me that is very special. This church, Dallas will give you a little more detail, but this church supports what we do so much that we like to show them our gratitude. And many of you have sat in a meeting in the last few days and written a little note to the church staff. And they're in this beautiful box that says grateful right on top. And from Allendale AA with love. Senior Pastor Thomas Daniel is here. His wife Beth, Darlene is here. Would you like to say something?
Yeah. It's a dangerous thing to give a preacher a microphone, and because you can talk for a long time, and then there are other people that just don't want to hear you talk at all. So I want to say. So I didn't grow up in the church. I didn't grow up thinking I would do what I'm doing now. And one of the first examples I ever experienced of what I think church is supposed to look like was when I had a family member who worked the steps and became sober. And when you saw the level of honesty, the level of community, the level of how change people's lives can change, there was a sense in me of going, that's, I think, some of what it's supposed to look like. We have a saying here, we talk about a covenant a lot of being in community, but community is not just being around people. We talk about being life on life. Do people actually know what's going on in your life? Do they have access and authority in your life? And do you have the same with them? Because that's how we change. And so I just want to say thank you for this. You all are an important part of who this church is. I hope you know that. We are, we celebrate getting to host this group for 20 years. We're grateful that how God has worked in so many different lives. And we look forward to a whole lot more years together. But please know that you guys, it's not that we are hosting you. We're in partnership learning with you about how we go forward. So thanks for letting us be a part of that along with you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Any pastor who wears Vans is my kind of guy. Okay. At this time, we have a member that has a couple of years of sobriety. He's been around for a minute. And we call him Dallas. And Dallas is going to tell us how this came to be. I'm about to walk this mic over there to Dallas, and he is going to give us the story. Everybody, welcome Dallas M. Yeah.
My name's Dallas. I'm an alcoholic. I got a funny little text the other day that said I was limited to 10 minutes. It takes me that long to say hello. This is phenomenal. The first meeting we had, and I'll get to all that in a little bit, there were 13 people. There were three of us here today that were in that original 13. Oh, well, does anybody not hear me? Do I really need a mic? Okay, sorry about that. Anyway, I'm going to try to give you a thumbnail sketch of what went on and why this church is here. And the Suburban Foundation owns the building where Northland meets, when the Northland, or when they found, formed their foundation, they bought a house on 35th Street, started meeting there. Covenant had a piece of property on balconies, no building. They were just forming. And then the state decided they wanted to put in a thing called MOPAC. And guess what two pieces of property got taken? The house on 35th Street and the lot that we had on balconies. Now, it so happened that there was a man who was a member of both, a man by the name of George, I won't give you his last name, who was struck sober for a while and was a realtor. All of this property, Covenant, the rec center, Suburban, was all cemetery property. I am told it's almost impossible to get cemetery property for something else, but it worked. Covenant got this piece of property. Carl Eaton, who was the founding pastor here, said he was convinced that God wanted a church at this corner. Too many things had to happen. Of course, there was no rec center then. Suburban built their place. And if you look at how Northland Drive goes down so steep right there, I'm told the whole property was like that. And that nice big lawn out in back, they say there's wrecked cars, boulders, all sorts of fill into that. Yeah. So obviously God wanted something there. Now, Allendale was not, the neighborhood was not real thrilled about a facility for alcoholics. Imagine that. Carl Eaton, I don't know what phase construction was going on, but Carl Eaton took it upon himself to go door to door in Allendale, talking about how grateful it was to have Alcoholics Anonymous in this area. This has absolutely nothing to do with the history, but on September 30th, we called Carl. It was a Saturday, and I'll never forget. Said, we need to talk to you. He said, I have a wedding at 4. Can it wait till afterwards? I think if we said no, he'd have come for whatever time he could. Anyway, he made a great case, build up the why you can't do this thing alone. I had an aunt who got sober. I knew of all people a bartender that had gotten sober. So I was thinking about AA, and Carl drove me over to there. All right, that's my story, and you don't need to hear all that tonight. Well, you might. I've had a couple of frustrating days. My wife's in the hospital. And she's coming home tomorrow, so thank you. Thank you for the O's and the uhs. Anyway, back to the association. Carl was here. He was the founding pastor. He was exactly what God wanted. A wonderful grandfather kind of person. Am I right? Those of you who know Covenant. And we had some others. And then in 2004, I had been going to noon meetings over at Northland now. And someday I'll tell you about how that all happened, but we don't need to go into that either. You would all go to sleep before I got finished with those stories. Anyway, Jim Singleton was our pastor at that time, and he had had a chapter runoff and had me read it. It was about a mega church and what they did to support recovery groups. Now, the background is the noon meeting got so popular over at Northland that people were coming. It was in a small room. People were coming in, sitting on the floor. We couldn't get any more chairs in. Other people were opening the door. There wasn't even a place to sit on the floor. So I met with Jim, and I thought we were going to talk about that chapter. And I was ready, and he said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I think we need another non-smoking meeting in this area. He said, okay. He said, just one thing I want. He said, I like to go to the meetings. I said, okay. We'll make them all open. Anyone can come in. Called Carol and Morris, her husband, and Lonnie. Some of you remember Lonnie, maybe. I don't see a lot of huh. Anyway, the four of us met, and we decided we would start meeting once a week on Fridays. And I had some wonderful names I'd thought up for the group. Oh, they were fantastic. Carol just stuck her tongue out at me. That's the reaction I got from the other three. And finally, Carol spoke up and had the dumbest idea in the world. Why don't we call it Allendale? So that's how that all happened. We had our first meeting on the 6th of February. We met in a room that's no longer available. It's now the choir's file. And we met there for a while. Kind of outgrew it. We moved off to another one. We went upstairs and the office building, that room's not there anymore. They converted it into a whole bunch of offices and stuff like that. This building was under construction. We met in Eaton Hall, which is the one to your left when you go down. It's a wonderful building, except your voice goes straight up to about 25 feet in the air. And it's not really a good place for discussions, but it worked. We met in trailer when construction was happening, and we had the trailers out there. And then when we got back into Eaton Hall, everything was fine except once every 3 months, something called, what is it, Darlene? IHN, Interfaith Hospitality Network, something like that. And it was homeless people would come, and they would sleep here and eat here, and that was all in Eaton Hall. So we had to move. So we moved downstairs out of desperation, moved back up. 3 months later, moved back down. And I sent a text or an email or whatever it was to Fred Clements, who was then building CEO. And our pastor at the time, and I said, as long as we have to keep moving, why don't we just stay down there in room 100? And that's how we got to where we are. They ran us out of everywhere else. We then, Morris and I used to have breakfast somewhat frequently, and I kept coming up with all these great ideas. And Morris's favorite thing was, Dallas, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I finally convinced him that some things were broke. We started some other alternative meetings at noon. We ended up with all 5 days of the week. Don't ask me what they were. The men's meeting is the one that survived. We had a beginner's meeting and everything else. So that's kind of a thumbnail of what happened. We Oh, I forgot the funniest name for this group was Morris. Because it was going to be a non-smokeless meeting in a church, he said, why don't we call it the Holy Smokeless? Before they got home, Carol had vetoed that one. What have I left out, Carol?
Two of us up here with no memories, we should probably shut up.
I got a microphone. By the way, I use the bar stool because I don't like standing, and it brings back pleasant memories of sitting on bar stools in great theological discussions about if those god dang hippies had any sense out in San Francisco, they'd be sitting in the bar drinking beer with us.
At the Mardi Gras Motel.
Yes, I had my last my last can of beer at the Mardi Gras Motel in Waco, Texas. And I don't think it exists anymore. They tore it down. They couldn't top that. And I said if I'd realized it was going to be my last drink, I'd have gotten on a plane and flown to New Orleans and got a hurricane. But I had a bottle, a can of Bud at 11:45 on December 29th, 1972. There was a lady here who had 50 years. Where are you?
Judy.
Oh, Judy, yeah. She was sitting here before somebody ran her out. I'll put our sobriety time up against any other table in the house. All right. Anybody got any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Dallas. Beautiful. Give Dallas another hand, please. So Lisa has something that she'd like to do, and Dallas, girl, listen up.
Hey, everybody, Lisa Alcoholic. So Allendale is presenting a gift. Actually, I'm standing right behind Dallas. It's probably not a good place to be.
Yeah, this is good.
Is presenting a gift to the founders, to all four founders. And it says, never underestimate the difference you made and the lives you touched. And right here it says, with heartfelt gratitude from Allendale, Dallas, Carol, Morris, Lonnie. Each one of you have one, and this one is being sent to Lonnie. We're in touch with him, so we invited him. It was a little late in the game, so he said he was so sorry to miss it, but to congratulate everybody, and he was so happy to be part of the beginnings of this. So.
Okay, let's take a moment of silence, if you would, and we'll open our speaker meeting. All together, God, grant me serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There's no dues or fees for AA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, organization, institution. What am I leaving out? Politics does not. Thank you. That's a good one. Don't leave that out. Okay. Doesn't wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So we say this, I am responsible. When anyone, anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that,
I am responsible.
Ooh, I like that when y'all do that. Okay, I think I have a friend named Peter who is going to read how it works. Peter, where are you? Come on, brother.
There you go. Awesome. Thank you, Wes. Sorry, I feel a little underdressed, but I figured I'd represent the tattoos part of the tattoos and ties of Allendale. Hi, I'm Peter. I'm an alcoholic. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We ask his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so where it would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and we were wrong when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Awesome. Thank you, Peter. Thanks, brother. And I have a friend named Carol who's going to read the promises.
Is that going to work? My name is Carol, and I'm an alcoholic. And I am so glad you all are here. This is a wonderful crowd. And so thank you for coming. My sobriety date is June 29th, 1988. And Allendale has meant so much to me, and I just I feel blessed, grateful and blessed. So here are the ninth step promises. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Thank you, Carol.